Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League.
The pigs create yet another phony confession to slander Mamiya Abu-Jamal.
Leonard Peltier remains imprisoned for the indigenous struggle for self-determination.
The Leonard Peltier Defense Committee holds a conference in June to launch an intensified campaign for his freedom.
The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than to college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown.
The August edition of Vanity Fair magazine has launched a surprise attack on the struggle to save Mamiya Abu-Jamal's life. The article, written by Buzz Bissinger, quotes a former prison volunteer who claims that Mamiya Abu-Jamal confessed to him 7 years ago. Bissinger, who wrote a book about Ed Rendell, the mayor of Philadelphia during Mamiya's 1982 trial, is so close to the Philly establishment that Mayor Rendell let Bissinger shadow him for 4 years, often passing Bissinger off as an aide at high-level meetings. The article tells the story of Philip Block, who was a volunteer with the Pennsylvania Prison Society in the early 1990s. Block claims that he asked Mamiya if he regretted killing the officer, and that Mamiya simply answered, yes. The story then goes on to say that Block kept silent about this confession until the April 24 Free Mamiya demonstration in Philadelphia offended him by its tactics. Bissinger's brotherly ties with the Philadelphia establishment show through his biased article, which did not attempt to interview Mamiya for his response to the allegation, an allegation which Mamiya has termed a rumor turned lie. Not only did the article fail to ask Mamiya for his response, but it also failed to mention that Block, the former prison volunteer who made this allegation against Mamiya, was kicked out of the Pennsylvania Prison Society for violating its internal rules, such as disregarding confidentiality. Hardly a credible witness. But this latest lie should come as no surprise. It is not the first concocted confession used against Mamiya. First, there were those from three police officers, then the hospital security guard. Similarly to Block's allegation, none of these previous lies were reported for months, despite the obvious and incredible importance of what they claimed. Why? The allegations were concocted to fulfill the needs of the prosecutor. The American system of injustice demands that someone must die for the righteous 1981 killing of a Philly cop engaged in an act of police brutality. Mamiya is a perfect target for these fascists to frame, to want to murder, because Mamiya is an outspoken leader who generates public opinion against the system. Mamiya is an outspoken advocate and leader of the black nation. He was a minister of information for the Black Panther Party and later a radio journalist. Mamiya was despised by the Philly police and government for his work exposing police brutality and the colonization of the black nation within the borders of the United States. Indeed, years before the 1981 incident, the mayor of Philadelphia singled Mamiya out at a press conference with this ominous warning, "Someday you'll pay for what you've done." In fact, Mamiya's political views, including his agreement with Mao Zedong that political power grows out of the barrel of a gun, were unconstitutionally used against him as evidence in his trial and in the imposition of the death penalty. This new evidence from Block could be used by the state to prevent Mamiya from getting that new trial he deserves. Mamiya's attorney, Leonard Weinglass, expects the prosecution to argue that Mamiya should not be given a new trial, as his newest confession would make that new trial even less likely to change the initial verdict. Or Block's statement could be used in a new trial against Mamiya, along with all the other falsified evidence put together over the years. Block certainly wouldn't do well as a witness, judging by his poor performance answering questions from Mamiya's attorney, Leonard Weinglass, on the Democracy Now! Radio program. During that radio program, Block told a convoluted story about becoming Mamiya's personal friend and then conducting research into the case via newspaper microfilm. While still Mamiya's friend, he determined that Mamiya was in fact guilty. Yet at a press conference aired on Democracy Now! On August 3rd, Mamiya's supporters revealed a letter dated July 17, 1993, in which Block told Mamiya, quote, "When you get a new trial, I think there's a good chance of acquittal." This letter seriously weakens Block's chronology, as it's dated after the time that Block now says he was convinced that Mamiya was in fact guilty. That this most recent slander was published is a sign of several things. First, that the anti-Mamiya, pro-state forces are becoming desperate in response to the painstaking legal and mass work done by the movement. But it's also a testament to the need to intensify the struggle to free Mamiya Abu-Jamal. Thank you.
On June 3, 1999, Leonard Peltier's lawyers filed a petition of habeas corpus. Peltier's lawyers and supporters have documented numerous details of witnesses lying, tampering with evidence, and falsified ballistics evidence. Following an FBI-instigated shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation, Leonard was portrayed as a cold-blooded killer during a trial that was merely a formality to his imprisonment. His parole has repeatedly been denied, and in spite of the mountains of evidence of an unjustified conviction, he has not been permitted to contest the reasons for his continued imprisonment. The government justifies its denial of parole by saying that Peltier's crime involved an ambush of Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, officers, and was a close-range, premeditated attack. Yet FBI files released since his original trial show that the FBI plotted and carried out a premeditated assault on Peltier and the people living in the Jumping Bull compound at Pine Ridge. Jennifer Harberry, a member of Peltier's legal team, stated, "This is not a matter of an unfair trial. This is a case of an innocent person being framed." America has fictionalized the case against Peltier to hinder a just struggle for self-determination. With intensified support for his freedom and the mounting evidence in Peltier's favor, his release seems more possible than in years past. MIM supports the legal fight for Peltier's freedom. We also agree with his supporters that activists must work consistently in the courts of public opinion to win any reforms under the current system. Ultimately, the people must seize state power, recapture land, and build institutions representing the interests of the oppressed. Governments of the people will need to retry the more than 1.8 million people within America's prisons so that America-labeled prisoners can be judged by their peers. The American kangaroo courts can be petitioned for some proletarian gains, but cannot be a means of lasting justice.
In 1973, Comprador Tribal Chief Dick Wilson's paramilitary guardians of the Oglala Nation, or Goons, were terrorizing the Oglala people. Goons were responsible for dozens of murders and terror throughout the Oglala. Rosalind Jumping Bull had asked the American Indian Movement, or AIM, of which Peltier was an organizer, to provide protection from the goons. AIM responded as part of its work to meet the people's needs and to fight for freedom. AIM educated about and protested against the ongoing American genocide of and broken treaties with indigenous nations. AIM also did basic work among the people of Pine Ridge, helping to plant gardens, rebuild homes that had been shattered by goon squad attacks, and build support for self-determination. After years of increased activity by AIM, allied traditionals and sympathetic supporters, the FBI sought a justification to intensify its assault against AIM. On June 26, 1975, two FBI agents invented a case of theft and raided the Jumping Bull compound. Assuming that the goons were attacking, AIM returned fire, and in the fighting, two FBI agents were killed. Almost immediately, helicopters, 200 state troopers, goons, U.S. Marshals, and SWAT teams gathered nearby. The following day, the FBI multiplied its invasion forces, including hundreds of M16-equipped FBI agents and other pigs, at least 9 armored personnel carriers, and several UE helicopters. The invasion included warrantless searches, destruction of property, physical intimidation, and false arrests. The FBI murdered AIM member Joe Stuntz Kilsright during the attack. This type of invasion had been launched before and would be repeated in the FBI's war against AIM. Peltier fled across the illegitimate border between the United States and Canada. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police captured Peltier and extradited him on a faked affidavit. Unjustly arrested for the deaths of two FBI agents during the invasion, Leonard Peltier has been in prison for 23 years. The FBI and state fabricated evidence used to extradite Peltier and build the case against him. The FBI coerced witnesses and mysteriously lost exculpatory evidence. It withheld ballistic evidence that favored the defense. The judge cooperated with the conviction train, refusing to admit evidence that proved the FBI's intent to destroy AIM. He excluded the evidence that had helped to get other AIM members acquitted on the same charges that Peltier faced.
Almost 2 decades after the trial, files obtained through the Freedom of Information Act revealed what AIM had suspected at the time. The FBI raid was pre-planned. Prior to the attack, AIM was under increased surveillance. The swift military response to the initial firefight could have only been coordinated with advance preparation. During an appeal in the Eighth Circuit Court, the basis for Peltier's conviction was discredited. The most precise ballistic tests prove that the gun used in evidence at Peltier's trial did not kill the FBI agents. The FBI knew this, but suppressed it during the trial. Even the government says it can no longer prove Peltier's guilt. Among layers of lies, it is clear that the FBI planned and instigated the shootout, not Peltier. The state has already agreed that this new evidence is valid, yet a judge has ruled that the evidence would not affect the outcome of a retrial. Yet this discredited evidence is the legal justification for denying Peltier parole. Peltier's defense team argues that the state needs to choose. Either Peltier should get a new trial because of falsified evidence in the original trial, or the state must stop using the falsified evidence to refuse parole.
The Leonard Peltier Defense Organizing Conference, sponsored by the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee in June, successfully underscored America's perpetration of violence and injustice against indigenous peoples. Attended by over 150 participants, the conference launched an intensified campaign to free Peltier. The conference educated attendees about America's history of genocide, the FBI Counterintelligence Program, or COINTELPRO, and details of Peltier's framing, extradition, and unfair trial for murder. Discussion focused on the continuing campaign for Peltier's freedom. Peltier wrote in his introductory statement to the conference, quote, "This Constitution of the U.S. does not apply to everyone. It does not apply to my people. We cannot allow this government to continue. This affects more than me. This affects more than my people now. This is the same way the U.S. treats other countries." MIM attended the conference to build unity with those opposed to the imperialist repression. "We agree with Peltier that American law does not apply to indigenous peoples. Our support for his freedom is part of the struggle against imperialism and white settler nation domination. Imprisonment of political leaders like Leonard Peltier is an oppressive tool to thwart anti-imperialist organizing, but such attacks on political leaders can only prolong the cancerous life of the imperialist system. They cannot make it invincible." The conference presented a clear indictment against the American prison system, with many people emphasizing the need for an internationalist perspective in fighting injustice. During the Prison Issues panel, former prisoner Ida Robinson said, quote, "Colonialism has alienated oppressed peoples. If we don't fight it, they will continue to kill us one by one. It may be different from how it happened 40 or 80 years ago, but it's still genocide." Damning imperialism for its anti-people politics, Leonard Peltier Defense Committee organizer and former prisoner Bobby Castillo said, quote, "We're tired of the lies. They attack people trying to change their own living conditions. They are at war." Ramona Africa added, quote, "This government manipulates public opinion to make resistance criminal." Dennis Brutus, who was imprisoned in South Africa because of his involvement in the anti-apartheid movement, also spoke at the conference. He eloquently linked the battle for Peltier's freedom from the U.S. prisons to continued opposition to America's atrocities worldwide. Brutus said, "It is significant that Amnesty International is now taking a clear stand on Peltier's case. Amnesty International decided in April 1999 to call for Peltier's immediate release. This is a positive step forward, but as Brutus pointed out, there is much more work to do." He emphasized the need for youth to organize. He said, quote, "Youth focus on political prisoners in other countries, but they believe the myth that there are no political prisoners in the U.S. The repressive American lockdown only breeds the resistance it attempts to quell. White America will continue to attack progressive victories as they are won. For this reason, MIM fights winnable battles that contribute to the overall struggle to dismantle imperialism. Proletarian-led armed struggle to seize state power is ultimately the only way oppressed nations will gain freedom from imperialist control. We commend the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee for organizing this conference, and we urge readers to work with MIM to advance anti-imperialism towards socialism. The Leonard Peltier Defense Committee is planning several actions. During the month of November, they plan a continuous protest in Washington, D.C., climaxing with a march on so-called Thanksgiving weekend. MIM will continue organizing work on the streets, through our media, and through continued education for the masses. We'll organize an anti-imperialist contingent for the D.C. march to build support for Peltier's freedom and the freedom of all oppressed peoples of the world. The Leonard Peltier Defense Committee can be contacted at P.O. Box 583, Lawrence, Kansas, zip code 66044, or by phone at 785-842-5774.
This has been Under Lock and Key, a Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts, 01004, or email railradio@min.org.